All right, welcome to another episode of Out the Rabbit Hole here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, also on the web at KUCI.org. I'm Robert Larson. This is our April 2nd, 2009 edition of the show, day after April Fool's. I don't know if that'll have any bearing on what we do today, but that'll be for you to judge. It's about 5:09 on the clock here. And getting going a little later than usual. We had our usual opening music there from The Stooges, I Gotta Write, and a little bit from the soundtrack of the movie The Mission. That's a Marconi thingy. Good stuff. So, and before we get into things, I got a couple of quick reminders. One of those is the opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the KUCI staff or management or the UC Board of Regents. And also, we do not recommend that you do anything illegal. That is your choice if you want to do something like that. But yes, even though we may be talking about things that would be classified that way, we do not recommend that. And also, if you want to give me some feedback on the show, I always appreciate that. You can email me at rglarson@kuci.org. You can also catch me on MySpace. That's myspace.com/outtherabbithole. As regular listeners to this show know, our overarching theme is exposing toxic contrived realities and exploring enchanted ones. So I'm always excited to discover others who really get what it means to question consensus reality and who understand the value of the perturbation of everyday consciousness. Recently, I became acquainted with a sort of underground group steeped in this ethic. They are known as Fleshcap. In studio with me today are representatives from that group, Sergeant Spore and Liquid Lucy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Robert.
All right, it's great to have you. And so let's just get right into this. What is or who are Fleshcap?
Well, I think the best way to describe us is the best word would be community. We're a small group within the larger psychedelic community, and our objective is to protect and preserve what we refer to as allies, namely plants and substances that nourish the spirituality and provide enlightenment. And really, we carry out this objective in three ways. Number one, we educate. We support groups such as Arrowhead. Arrowhead.org is a website that provides unbiased information for regarding substances such as what we call the allies. The other way we carry out this objective is we provide a sense of community for people that want to belong and that are searching out for a network and a way to process some of these experiences that they've had. And thirdly, we build awareness. You know, we offer a weekly article on our website, fleshcap.com, and, do public speaking and, just attend events, bring people together and talk about what we experience.
Well, I love what you're doing. That's a great service because, as we know, these teachers, whether they be plant teachers or chemical teachers, are still persecuted. It used to be the church, and now it is government authorities. And so we have to be careful how we present this because it is true that there are dangers involved with these things. But I think with this type of this community, I like to use the word cult, and I do not use that as a pejorative. This is a group of people who get together with a goal of, in this case, be enlightenment. And you have to be use special language. You can be knocked down real quick and real easy by the authorities if they want to. And so I like how you guys are presenting this. Lucy, do you have anything to add to what Sergeant Spore?
I do. I think one of our goals is to unite a very sometimes fragmented scene. People tend to identify with a particular, what we call it, like you said, ally. And we want to bring them all together under a common purpose so that they can realize that the underlying factor here is becoming more spiritual and becoming closer to other dimensions or other parts of yourself that are there.
And it's, you know, you talk about the allies, as you guys call them, and we, you have names for them that are kind of coded, but those of us who are familiar can kind of figure this out. But, you know, they are things such as ayahuasca, such as the psilocybin mushroom, such as LSD, and what are some of the others?
DMT, salvia, divinorum, peyote, just to name a few.
Yeah, and so these are... these allies, they can be helpful. They are very powerful. They have to be approached with respect. And you guys go into them, and I appreciate that. And you also, I like the way you make a presence around town. I think this is more in L.A. I don't know if you've gotten too much into Orange County here. I'm sure you have, but it's more in L.A., but it's also all around the world. And it's with, you have a symbol that you've created, and we'll get into that, what that is, and you can find this on fleshcap.com.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And so this symbol, you have stickers and posters and things, right?
That's right.
People can find around town. And so it creates this thing where it's not like overtly saying this is who or what we are. It is more like coded. People who are in the know, who are part of this community, they can figure it out. So but if both of you could talk a little bit about the symbol, how you created it, and how it's dispersed around town.
Well, you know, I think the flesh cap symbol came about a long time ago with my first experiences with psilocybin mushrooms back in the day. It was first born with just the idea that, look, you know, these things have provided me with such a profound experience in my life that I wanted to produce art around that and just get that symbol out. You know, I remember the day after one of my my initial journeys with the mushroom, I sat around drawing the mushroom, you know, all day, just thinking about it and just thinking about how beautiful and how powerful it was at the same time. And slowly over time, I introduced other artists to the idea of creating an icon out of this. And, you know, if people that are familiar with artists such as Shepard Fairey understand how powerful things like urban street art can be. And slowly but surely it kind of evolved into the whole idea of let's put it out there and let's send our message through this medium, which is the street art and which is the sticker and the poster and all that.
And we've also given people the opportunity on our website to create their own rendition of the sacred mushroom. And we have a whole art collective on our website that has many, many different versions done by very, very accomplished artists. And our goal is to show the power of this ally to alter perception so that different things can be seen differently through different eyes. And so each image represents that idea.
And again, fleshcap.com, they can go there and see all the different art. So let's talk about your original symbol. And Sergeant Spohr, here you have it on your T-shirt. I'm looking at it, and which is great. Another way to spread it. And it's the overarching figure is a mushroom, but there are a lot of different things incorporated into it. So, yeah, tell us about what they are and how you came to that.
Well, basically, yes, we have the mushroom, which is the primary symbol in there, and it's the chief symbol of flesh cap. And then within that mushroom symbol, you're going to find things like an eye at the top, which is a very common symbol when it comes to you know, mystical, you know, type sects, where you know, the spiritual eye and the enlightenment that it symbolizes is present here. Also, we have the skull, which is also part of the mushroom stem, and what that symbolizes is just a reminder of the of human and mortality, that we are going to return there. And basically, these are all themes that emerged to me in my journeys with the mushroom, and that's how they found their way onto the actual symbol. Below the skull, you're going to find a rising sun, you know, symbolizing that you know things. Things go away, but they also come back. That, you know, that life is kind of a cycle here. And, you know, surrounding the mushroom, you'll see the Ouroboros, the serpent, eating itself, which again symbolizes that which comes must go, and that, you know, which comes also destroys itself in the endless cycle of life.
And Lucy, do you have anything?
Well, I came into the scene after the mushroom had already been created, but we came together and collaborated on the actual composition of the mushroom And I think it really provides a foundation for all of the statements that we want to make. And every time we maybe go around town and glance at it, even myself, I'm reminded of its purpose, and I'm reminded of a statement that it makes. And I'm sure that each person that sees it has a different impression or has a different idea of what they think it means. But that's inherently part of our goal, is to have people identify differently to the concept.
Mm-hmm. It's always been just astonishing to me that there were these mushroom cults in the New World, as you know, mm-hmm. we of a European perspective call it, and that when the Spanish conquistadors came in, it was so stamped out that it became this underground cult that just sort of barely survived. And for what you guys mentioned this on your site, for about 400 years, it was unknown outside of the small cult that remained in Mexico. And was it Gordon Wasson who rediscovered this?
It was.
Yes.
You guys talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, Gordon stumbled upon this, I believe it was back in the late 40s or the early 50s. And he had the, LSD had come on the scene at this point. And since LSD had come on, people had started theorizing, well, this probably wasn't the first. This, LSD isn't the first psychedelic, and people started searching for this psychedelic mushroom. And in fact, in the beginning, a lot of people were kind of laughed at for proposing the idea of a psychedelic mushroom. They didn't think it was possible. They didn't think it was around. They had mushroom stones that were dug up in South America that are thousands of years old, but nobody thought that they were actually replicas of what would be psychedelic mushrooms. But Wasson went down to Mexico. He met with a woman, Maria Sabina, and she actually put together a velada, which is a mushroom ceremony, and took him on a psychedelic journey. And from there, he took his story to Time magazine, and it got published. And then you had the birth of the mushroom cult all over again, because we had people from all over the world going down to Mexico trying to join up with these people, and the mushroom was rediscovered at that point.
Mm-hmm. Which kind of reawakens the awareness that in Peru, the ayahuasca journeys never did get eliminated, which is pretty impressive. The Spanish managed to miss that element of their culture because it's still alive and flourishing down there.
Yeah, I think there were a lot better places to hide out in the Amazon
uh-huh.
there.
That's right.
Avoid the wrath of the Inquisition or whatever it was that the Spanish authorities were using to control. And getting back to the symbolism, I love your mushroom icon. And again, anybody who wants to see this, listening to the show right now, maybe on your computer, go to fleshcap.com and you can have it. But I love the symbol. And we talked about the serpent that you've incorporated into that. So, the serpent, as you said, represents wisdom. This goes back into time. And are you guys familiar with the one Gnostic interpretation of the Garden of Eden myth, wherein the serpent is the wise one trying to break through the spell of the false god to impart light to Adam and Eve? Are you familiar with that interpretation?
Well, you know what? I'm not exactly familiar with that particular interpretation, but I do understand that many cultures have actually viewed the serpent as a source of wisdom and a source of knowledge of things such as sacred plants, because they are seen to live close to the ground and interact with these things.
Yeah, it's I like that flip, because we're always taught that the serpent was the bad guy in that myth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, well, maybe he was like, because, eating of the fruit of the tree of knowledge, isn't the mushroom mm-hmm. a light-filled herb of knowledge? So
definitely.
I always have liked that. I was wondering if you guys had kind of tripped on that notion. But, the whole thing, this was put down, the mushroom cult, for centuries, about 400 years.
About 400 years, yes.
The idea that something could be that stamped out and only survived in rumors, and it's almost like something you'd write about in a novel, but this is reality.
That's right. You know what, Rob? It wasn't completely stamped out. I think it was so underground, but they were able to preserve it. I mean, if you were going to go down to Mexico today, you'll see that there are still a lot of small villages out there that are using the mushroom, which shows us that it's been passed down from generation to generation. Now, mind you, they have combined that with the Catholic religion. So yeah. You'll find people down there using the mushrooms, but at the same time, they have a crucifixion hanging in their home and embracing the Christian religion. So they've combined those two. I know Maria Sabina herself, who Gordon Wasson went down to and had that first mushroom experience, she spoke a lot about Jesus and his teachings and how the mushrooms would connect her with God and Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that is an interesting twist on that, and there's so many traditions, you know, we have in the Caribbean and with the Santeria and the Voodoo, that these were indigenous religions that then overlaid Catholicism, and fascinating stuff, the way cultures mix and all of that. But In Daniel Pinchbeck's book, we all are fans of Daniel Pinchbeck, that's and he's right. been on the show a couple times. He conveyed the notion that Maria Sabina later became disenchanted with the way all of these seekers came along for the mushroom, and they weren't, in a certain sense, weren't really seekers, but were choosing to do this in a recreational manner and actually disrespecting the mm-hmm. mushroom and the intelligence therein, and and you and I have talked about this off the air. I've talked, I think, with both of you about this notion of these teachers, these allies need to be respected.
Yeah.
If you approach this in a way, this is fun and this is recreational, I mean, it can be fun, but it's not, that is not the way to go. It is about reverence.
That's right. And right. You know what, I think Albert Hoffman, who probably went through this experience about 40, 50 years ago, he wrote a book, LSD, My Problem Child. And in that, in the beginning, he saw LSD as a spiritual tool, something that could be used for enlightenment. We had lots of intellectuals using this, such as Aldous Huxley, who wrote The Doors of Perception. And, they saw within a 10-year period this transform from something as a spiritually enlightening tool into something that was being used by kids on the street and being used recreationally. And you know what, Robert? I think this takes me back to one of our objectives here at FleshCap, and that's to remind people that these are sacred tools, these are sacred teachers, and if we treat them as such, then they will bestow knowledge to us. But if we misuse them, if we abuse them, then they do have the potential to harm as well.
They will kick your butt.
That's right. Yeah. They will. And I think that's what we saw a lot in the 60s. I think this idea that some of these psychedelic gurus, such as Timothy Leary, putting the idea out that we should all be on the streets eating acid and mushrooms, and really, he made a media circus out of the whole thing. And what was the result? I mean, I think people, number one, they never held these things in reverence. There was nothing sacred about them, and ultimately, we had people misusing them all over the place, and the government's reaction was to completely stamp it out. And, once again, just like we saw 400 or 500 years before, it was virtually eliminated for a while.
Right. Our goal is to create a sense of respect towards the allies, because they do offer us these lessons. And it doesn't just apply to mushrooms or to LSD. We also try to stress the importance of the lessons that you can get from other things, such as ecstasy, even with the modern-day rave movement. We're trying to instill a sense of respect in so-called ravers for a substance that they use that has a very strong potential for enlightenment, even in that scene.
I'm sorry, Robert. I was going to say, I'm glad Lucy brought that up right now, because I think, again, we're at a crossroads here. We have a new substance or a new ally, which is MDMA or ecstasy. And we're seeing a large youth movement in that direction. We have been seeing it for the last 10 years. And I think we're at the point where we need to educate these kids in the sense that they need to understand that what they are dealing with is something very powerful, something that has the potential to provide a source of enlightenment and insight into life, but at the same time, it has a high potential for abuse. And if we send the message again that it is something special, that it is a what did you call it earlier, a ceremonious type substance, mm-hmm. right? Ecstasy, and we respect that we don't do it every weekend. If we implant the idea that this is something that they can embrace and learn from, then they will respect that for time to come.
Yeah, they have to treat it in such a way that it doesn't lose the magic, which is another term that we gained from a book that we read recently called Transformation. In the beginning, you may experience sort of a euphoria or a profound sense of oneness with those that are around you at a rave, but you know, you can lose that over time when you become accustomed to it, or you start changing your purpose for using that particular substance.
This is Out the Rabbit Hole, KUCI in Irvine. Robert Larson here in studio with me, Liquid Lucy and Sergeant Spore. They are from the organization Flesh Cap. And yeah, this whole thing, you talked about the 60s and how things got out of hand and got abused and people weren't respecting these things. And now, you know, we have the rave scene. In a certain sense, that's happening again. Mm-hmm. There are people that are doing this in the proper way, approaching it with reverence, whether it be ecstasy or even ketamine, and that's fine. And then there are people that, yeah, it's all about a party. And there's nothing wrong with partying and with having fun, but, you know, mixing the ecstasy with Jack Daniels and maybe some Ritalin and whatever else, no, that's not the way to go. And so I appreciate that's you guys are putting that message out there, and that it's the I like the way that it seems what you are doing is that what we further I want to add another disclaimer. It doesn't seem that you guys are saying that people should be doing this stuff. It's for some people. They are tools.
Right.
And if you decide these tools are the spiritual path you want to use, great. You may go on a spiritual path that does not include any of these allies, and that's fine. But if so, here, you know, respect, reverence, understanding, doing your research, understanding what can happen. So I applaud you for approaching it in that way, putting it out there that mm-hmm. way for people. And also, so yeah, this thing of if somebody wants to use these allies, then they need to be on the path of a seeker. If you're not, you can get into trouble. And so you're putting out your icons, your symbol, it's out mm-hmm. there. It's not saying, oh, hey, here's what you need to do. It's just like, here, this is here. It's a little path. Okay, if that resonates with you, you're going to talk to other people. Hey, have you seen that symbol, the mushroom with the eye and the snake and the skull? What's that? And if a person's on the right path, there's going to be a resonance. And then maybe they're going to go to the Flesh Cap website, and they're going to find out this ethic that you guys are putting forward, and here's what can happen. Here's what you can do. Here's the community. Connect with other people. Find out who's doing what it is all about. And this is I think a really good path, and again, I applaud you guys for doing that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I want to talk about some specific experiences you two have had, and recently, not too many months ago, you went to the Amazon, to Peru?
Peru, yes.
That's correct. We were in Peru.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Why did you go there? What was the purpose of that, and what happened?
I'm trying to remember now at exactly at what point I discovered ayahuasca. It might have been on Coast to Coast with George Norrie,
yeah.
Or it might have been Terrence McKenna. It's kind of fuzzy in my mind at this point, but at mm-hmm. some point I heard about ayahuasca. I heard that it was something that was culturally embraced in South America, something that you could go down there as a foreigner and actually participate in a genuine cultural and enlightening experience.
And legal.
And legal at that, which is something that we're not able to do up here in the States. So we decided, Lucy and I decided that, hey, let's go down there and then let's check it out. We stumbled on Ayahuasca Wazi online, and they have a little, what they call
retreat center.
What is it, a meditation or...
They consider it a retreat center.
A retreat center, there you go. And we flew down there, and we didn't know what to expect. In fact, we didn't even know if they were going to really exist, because we had only talked to them via email. They have a little website. It wasn't too fancy at all, but we were surprised when we got down there of just how great of a place it was. It was absolutely beautiful outside of the city of Cusco. And there were people from all over the world that were with us.
Okay, so let me ask you something real quick before you continue with that story. So you said you didn't know exactly what to expect, but I would imagine somehow it felt right. You were following some sort of intuitive impulse that maybe had been with you because of previous work with the Allies.
It was intuitive for them the moment we lifted off, leaving Los Angeles. As soon as the plane started to descend into Cusco, it was a very, very powerful spiritual feeling that came over us, because we could sense that something was very profound was going to happen. And just the whole atmosphere of the Andes and the geography of the place was very powerful. And we were just kind of following this innate mission that we were put on. Like, we could sense it right away that we were going to experience something very, very powerful.
Yeah, and with all our past experiences with various allies, I mean, up to this point, we had experiences with LSD, the mushrooms, peyote, and salvia divinorum. This was just another ally that I felt was calling out, and that's something that we needed to experience, something that had some insight to offer.
And so for those who don't know, ayahuasca is a brew that has been made for millennia, as far as we know, in South America. It consists mainly of two plants. The one is a vine.
One is a vine, yeah. You got me on the names. I'm not sure.
I know them, but for some reason not coming to me right now. And one is a root. And one contains DMT, which is this powerful psychedelic agent that actually is endogenous to the human brain. We actually produce this, but when this is a way of ingesting it, raising the level in your system. But DMT is not orally active, and so the other plant in this mix, the ayahuasca, somehow allows it to become orally active. It stops another chemical element. I wish we had somebody who was more chemically adept here that could explain this. But the thing that is fascinating about that is that it only works if you bring these two very specific plants together. And somehow these people indigenous to this region, or actually it's throughout the Amazon basin, figured this out.
Absolutely amazing. I mean, to hear the story here of how, actually, there's no way to trace it back, but just to think about how unlikely it was that somebody would combine these two plants in such a manner and ingest them in such a way. I mean, it really is.
And it tastes horrible, which makes it even more surprising that somebody would do that to themselves.
Yeah, well, hey, let's drink this. This tastes great. And yeah, so that is an amazing notion, and it's not you just mix them together. It's a long process of brewing this, and it's hours and hours to boil it down to a. It's kind of a thick, darkish liquid. Am I right?
It looks like hot chocolate.
Okay.
Basically, it's a brown liquid. The person that makes it's called a brewmaster.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they have to be very well trained and experienced, and they can change the levels of the substance in the brew. They can make it very strong, or they can make it very weak.
And so this outside of the indigenous cultures was not really known to the Western world for a long time. And but it again, it was like the mushroom cults. There were rumors of it. And then one book that I think helped to bring it to prominence was the Yahe letters. Yahe is another name for ayahuasca. And this was William Burroughs and Allen Ginsberg, I think, back in the 50s.
That's right.
And so there's all this out there. You guys had obviously read a lot of this and knew about this and decided, you know, got the feeling this was right. You went down there. So can you talk about the actual experience of it?
Yeah.
You know, when you went into the ceremony and they gave it to you to drink and how that was and what happened?
Well, there was about, I'd say there's about 30 of us in what they called the temple. And what this is a small hut out in the back there of their large piece of property. And what we do is we, one at a time, we ingest the brew and we sit in a room that's completely dark. And, you know, I'll let Lucy talk a little bit about that because it was quite an experience there with just the way they shut out all the light and all the people sitting in silence waiting for it to come on.
Right. There is no light. And after everybody drinks the brew, it takes about an hour or so for it to kick in. And you are kind of sitting there waiting for something to happen, and it does hit you all of a sudden. It's a very stressful feeling initially, and it can be very, very, very scary at times and very beautiful at times. And it's very dynamic. It can go in many different directions in a very short amount of time. We both, in fact, had near-death experiences during our first journey.
And you know what's so unique about ayahuasca in particular is the sense that an entity is approaching you during this journey. Unlike anything else that any other ally that we've experienced, it was almost like something had emerged and come forth to have a conversation with me. It came out and it was almost like, here, follow me, we're going to go and we're going to see some things right now. And the pictures that it painted, I mean, things about my own life. It was laying to rest doubts that I had about who I was, what I was, what was in store for me in the future as far as, you know, not necessarily like shining light on this is what's going to happen to you, but this is what life is all about, and this is the process that you're going to go through. So in that sense, I would have to say that ayahuasca was one of perhaps the most profound teacher and delivered the most profound lessons out of any of the allies that I had experienced.
Wow, we'll have to talk about that a little more. This is Out the Rabbit Hole. Robert Larson here in studio with me. Sergeant Spore and Liquid Lucy, they are from FleshCap, and you can find them at FleshCap.com, also MySpace.com/FleshCap. FleshCap, and find out more about all these things they're talking about. So the ayahuasca trip, you mentioned, Lucy, it's difficult physically. And was there retching and vomiting? Or
yes, okay. They call it purging.
Yeah.
And they recommend that you let it happen and that you let it take its course, and it does happen. And everyone else, you know, you hear everyone else purging as well. But it really is part of the experience. And by the time you are in that situation, it's not something that is gross or it's something that you are very at comfort with. It's very soothing in a way, as you hear everybody else release their emotions or their challenges.
It's almost like a physical metaphor for the cleansing. I mean, the release of. It's so hard to put a word on this.
Mm-hmm.
It would just the garbage that's built up in you as a person, the psychic garbage, I guess you could say. But the physical vomiting is almost the way of cleaning it out, and you can. It's a
relief when you hear other people do it because you know that they are feeling better and lighter and freer as a result.
So you are doing this physical purging, but it is also like a cleansing of the soul as well.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah. So, but you said also, Lucy, that there's a part you have some fear, and what's that about? What is it like confronting mortality and all kinds of things like that,
It is confronting mortality. There's also just physical pain that you can't necessarily explain. There are color changes, I think, that affect your emotions. Colors change from bright to gray to warm colors to cool colors. And I think those change as your attitude and as your experience is changing. And in fact, that is largely affected by the leader who plays medicine songs that largely guide your trip and that change your experience. It's kind of, they call it a journey for a reason. You really are on a journey that changes and fluctuates. And this leader, ours was a very, very good leader that played his guitar and sang. He had a large control over our experiences.
I've heard called the Icaros?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And that this leader, if he is or she is very skilled, knows which songs to sing.
Definitely.
And it manipulates this, and that this whole thing, there's a serious synesthesia where colors have sort of sounds, and sounds have flavors, and smells have feelings. Is that all kind of going on?
It's definitely going on. In fact, the colors tend to flow right along with the music, much like a wave. The leader, I guess the traditional would be called a shaman, but ours chose not to be called a shaman.
Mm-hmm.
He would kind of pull you along in times when he felt that people needed it. And it was very soothing, definitely got us through the experience in one piece.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, Robert, I'm always kind of reluctant to share specific instances in some of my journeys, but I think perhaps this would best illustrate for the audience exactly what I encountered on this ayahuasca journey. On the last night, because we were there for a week and we did it three times, so we had three ceremonies while we were there. On the third ceremony, up to that point, it was slowly revealing to me what it was that I was afraid of as a person. It was almost like I got there and I said, look, I was asking it questions, and it said, no, we're going to show you, we're going to teach you what it is that you need. And it did. It said, look, Spore, you're afraid of death. You're afraid of confronting what it is that lies ahead. So on the third night, the entity, like I described earlier, it sort of approached me and it said, come with me and we're going to show you some things here. And it guided me to a place. There was two beings, and they were sitting across from each other, and I was lying in the middle of them. My physical body was lying there. And what they did is they packed me up, they put me in a basket, and they sent me down a stream or a river. And I can remember my journey thinking, oh my God, what are you doing with me? And they said, no, that's not you. You are not that.
Yeah.
And that point, it was such a profound experience. And I can remember shortly after that, leaving the room for a moment, going to stand outside and feeling so liberated at that point, knowing that, look, that's not me. I don't have to be afraid of that.
Wow, that's a lesson that's so hard to learn. Many of us say, I know I'm going to die. But when you really get in a situation where, like, maybe you'll almost die in a car crash, you're like, unless you've really gotten to this place, you have gotten to, it's like you're scared out of your mind. So now, do these entities, they are just speaking to you in plain English?
No.
There was no, in my, you know what, I wouldn't say that they were speaking to me at all as far as it as a spoken language goes. It was almost like an understanding. And it was, I don't know how to explain it. It's a communication unlike anything else. It was almost like their gestures and the things that they showed me was communicating me in a way that was so solid that even the spoken word wouldn't have done justice to what they were telling me.
So it's almost like a language beheld, almost maybe kind of like we think of telepathic. They're just conveying.
That would be the best way to put it. Yeah.
But even that doesn't quite.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing, because we're dealing with the ineffable.
Yeah.
So, what you mentioned there, one thing a little earlier, what I thought was interesting is that you said, unlike any of the other allies you'd worked with, that you felt that there was a sort of a cohesive intelligence that was communicating with you, right?
It was almost, like a singular entity in a way.
Yeah, and I have not done the ayahuasca, but done some high-dose psilocybin mushroom trips, and so, yeah, it's not exactly like that, but I have felt on these high-dose trips that there was an intelligence that I was confronting, was not speaking in plain English. It didn't have like a discrete form, like we would think of as a physical form, but it was just like, it was more like I wasn't having my intelligence tweaked so much. I mean, that was going on, but it was more like, here you are, here is an alien intelligence of some sort. I can't think of a better word. And it's just like, you got to deal with it. Here it is. You've opened the door, and here's what it does. It speaks a weird language with all kinds of, it's almost like mathematical sometimes with patterns and these geometrical things and strange music. But it's almost like it's this very, very primal language. And do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. What's amazing to me is how quickly and easily we understand what it's telling us. It knows how to communicate with us so well. And I think one thing that the allies all share in common is this ability to teach. And there is an entity there with all of them. I misstated earlier, you know, the ayahuasca does have that specific, I just felt like it was more specific, like it was almost like a she, I could almost point at it and say, there you are right there, whereas with some of the other experience I've had with the mushrooms, it was almost like this force, I couldn't identify where pinpoint it anywhere, but it was this force, but it was at the same time delivering a message to me.
Yeah, a little more diffuse, but with the ayahuasca you're saying is more...
It's feminine. It's female.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've heard that from a lot of people. You agree with that?
They call it the mother for a reason. She's a tough love mother. She decides what lesson you're going to learn, and she kind of holds your hand a little bit and throws you right into the lessons that she has already planned out for you. And whatever you had on your agenda does not matter. She decides where you're going to go and what you're going to see.
Well, because that agenda you have is being put forth by your ego,
right.
Which is a tainted sort of entity.
That's right.
We sort of need those things to operate in this world, but we have to understand that they are tainted. That's my view of it.
Yes, I would
definitely.
Say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so you say she's female. You call her for short Aya.
Ally Aya.
Yeah,
is her flesh cat.
Who are the other allies? I like these little names you guys have. Because I like the way you guys, you deal with all this in a sort of cryptic way. You give these little names, and you have your icon. All because, to me, it resonates with the old mystery schools and the old cults that had to operate underground often and speak in coded language. So, yeah,
we're trying to change the language so that there's a positive connotation with the words.
These are drugs.
Right. We've been taught so many to react so negatively to these words all of our lives. So we're trying to throw out some positive language that people can associate with, like Sid.
Yeah, rather than LSD, LSD. Think of, what do you think of when you think of LSD? I mean, think of the connotations that come to mind. What is? I mean, you think of nightmares,
bad, toxic
waste. Brain frying. You picture the egg on the and the skillet there frying. Yeah. We come up with ally names. We have Sid, like she said, ally Sid, Honguito for the mushrooms, because even the mushroom, even a neutral word like mushroom is at this point carries with it a lot of negative connotations.
Ecstasy is Adam.
Ecstasy is Adam, which actually stems from the, help me out here, the 1980s research done by Anna Shulgin, I believe it was.
Well, there was Alexander or Sasha Shulgin.
And his wife.
I think it was Anne
Shulgin. There was a group of psychiatrists, and they referred to MDMA as Adam. Now, I can't remember exactly why. It goes back to the Adam and Eve story.
I think because there was MDMA, and it was sort of a changing of those letters around, adding the A in there. And, yeah, that Adam was the first man, this whole thing, that from that mythology. And you mentioned Sasha Shulgin, great researcher, and there were all these scientists, who we respect in our culture.
That's
we don't even have shamans, so to speak. But
so
we have these great scientists who have worked with these allies and that saw value in this. And so these weren't just kind of crazy tweaker kind of people.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're out there, and you mentioned Hoffman and Gordon Wasson and all these people, and then we had Terrence McKenna and his brother Dennis, and then we have people more like journalists like Daniel Pinchbeck, but these are people who are bright, intelligent people who saw the value in this. It's not just crazy kids, let's get high. It's not about that. And so I again appreciate you guys putting that notion out there, and we're just about out of time. So is there anything else you guys want to make sure you say before we have to close things out here?
Well, you know, I do want to say a couple of things. One, I just want to say thank you to the people that have actually been on board with us and participating with FleshCap, particularly Captain Kook, who's another close friend of ours, and Kook Muscle. They've been really supportive in what we've been doing as far as getting the word out and bringing other people on board and networking. And I guess what I want to leave the audience with is that, you know, the whether you turn to psychedelics as a form of spiritual enlightenment is not the point of FleshCap. I think the point of FleshCap is that we build a respect, and that, you know, we teach those that decide to use items such as psychedelics to respect them and use them in a manner that could be considered sacred.
I agree, and there isn't just one path. There's many paths, but all of them can be respected and can be of value.
Mm-hmm. All right, Sergeant Spohr and Liquid Lucy, thanks so much for being with us today. It was a really fun and enlightening conversation.
Well, great.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Robin. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And so, yeah, that's fleshcap.com, also myspace.com/fleshcap. And lots of more information there, links to other things, articles, artists. And if this resonates with you and you want to become part of the community, there are ways to become part of it.
Definitely. Okay.
Okay. And so, yeah, we've got Kyle coming up in just a few minutes. Things That Are Square, the excellent music show he always has at 6 p.m. here on Thursdays, KUCI in Irvine. And I've got some interesting shows coming up for you. I am working on right now, and we haven't confirmed anything yet, but we've had a little bit of correspondence of getting an interview with Rick Strassman, who many of you know has written DMT, The Spirit Molecule. He has a more recent book that goes into some of these experiences, and so hopefully we'll have him lined up in the weeks to come. We'll also be talking about politics and parapolitics, as we often do, and all this interesting stuff. So we got renewed for another quarter here at KUCI. I'm excited about that. And I also want to remind you that the opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the KUCI staff or management or the UC Board of Regents. And also remind you again, we do not encourage you to do anything illegal, just to explore where your heart leads you. I guess that'll about do it here. KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, also on the web at KUCI.org. And you can email me at rglarson@KUCI.org. You can also catch me on MySpace. That's myspace.com/outtherabbithole. This is Robert Larson saying I'll be talking to you next week.